This is EdgeCases. I'm Andrew Pontius.
And I'm Will French.
And our topic this week is improving performance.
Okay.
Yeah, or the alternate title is how to improve your app's performance with this one weird tip.
I'm surprised we haven't used that joke already.
I know. Well, it's not a good joke.
No,
that hasn't really stopped us before.
That never stops us now.
Okay, so finally, when I ask you if we have any follow-up, you can say yes now.
Yes, my Neopet dog has not eaten my digital homework. I hope I use that correctly. I don't even really know what a Neopet is.
No, nor do I.
I've heard the term. I think it is some sort of digi. Oh, you know what? I think it's a digipet is what I'm talking. Anyway, I don't know what I'm talking about. I just try to sound
just,
cool.
Just keep going.
Which is what the entire show is about, right?
Oh, you have no idea.
So, listener Ramsey Dow writes in for episode way back in episode 61, which I believe the title was something about cryptography tourists or something like that. Yeah. And apparently I had recommended bcrypt, and apparently that was so 2008 he recommended that I should bcrypt is pretty cool for 2000 and maybe arguably 2008, but we have better things nowadays. In particular, he points to PBKDF2, which sounds like maybe some sort of hardcore metal band or something, but KMFDM or something.
maybe in your world.
A KMFDM tribute band. That's what it sounds like.
Well, I've never heard of it, so.
So there's this entire class of algorithms that you take your password and turn that into something that's actually the correct length, and these are called key deviation functions or KDFs, and you don't want them to be able to operate too fast, because it turns out that if they can operate very fast and they're really good for doing mass cracking like dictionary attacks or rainbow tables type stuff,
right?
And so you want to slow them down, and so bcrypt apparently is something like you'd use in 2000, because that's what OpenBSD pioneered. I believe we mentioned in the episode that was basically you could supply a load factor that would you can basically kind of slow that slow the function down almost arbitrarily, and so that was a good technique. But there are better ones now. The PBKDF2 comes from our friends at RSA. Which is big name in cryptography.
Maybe your friends, not my friends.
Robert Anderson, right? That's what he gets for gain. You know, twitter.com/RSA. He gets a lot of spam for crypto spam. But so that's one of these functions that's widespread, and it's in Apple's common crypto libraries, and that's directly supported.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay. And the other thing that he wanted to point out was S-Crypt, which is the circa 2009 hotness.
S-Crypt?
Yes. Imagine crypt and with the word letter S in front of it. So
okay.
S-Crypt. Yes. It unfortunately sounds a lot like script, but it is S-Crypt. Yeah. And the cool thing about S-Crypt is that it is sequential memory hard. And problem is that these hash functions tend to be embarrassingly parallel, kind of like with the GPUs and how they're embarrassingly parallel. You know, you have an array of pixels, and you could throw multiple cores at them and kind of divide things up correctly, you know, very nicely. And these hash functions for passwords have the same issue. So the Colin Percival, who's also behind Tarsnap, which is online backups with the Truly Paranoid. He created this thing, this different function that allows you to. It's sequential, that you can't parallelize it nearly as well as you can other ways.
Oh yeah, okay.
Yeah, and it also is memory hard, in that apparently it burns up a lot of RAM to do this. And at least in comparison to the other functions. The idea is to basically make it things so that if you can build application-specific integrated circuits, or ASICs, that it gets a lot more expensive to do these types, to throw ASICs or hardware at the problem. So it's just you know, usually with computers, you want to make things faster. It's kind of, wow, now that I think about it, it's basically the inversion of your topic.
It really does.
Right, it's right. Funny. So this, that's how contrarian I am, is that I have to bring up the anti-performance thing right when you're going to talk about performance. But yeah, so we'll link to this all, and you should check it out. So it sounds like bcrypt is old and busted, and pbkdf2 and scrypt is the new hotness, and so we'll link to that, and so you guys can get up to date.
Or Common Crypto, I mean, using Apple's APIs.
Yeah, I mean, it's offered by Common Crypto, right. But I think you still need to know what you're looking for.
Gotcha. Yeah. And I think one of the nice things about Common Crypto, I could just be talking out of my ass, as it were, but is that Common Crypto is both on iOS and Mac.
Yeah, I believe that's the commonest. Yeah.
So
actually, you know, I am not sure about that's where the common comes from. But anyway, yes, it is. I'm pretty sure it's not both.
Right. Well, common is, yeah. Anyway, yes.
I think its name is for commoners.
Well, I think Apple Certs. Adopted something which was not just for it, right? I mean, it's another standard.
At least it used to be underneath, but I think they
oh, really?
Don't do that anymore.
Is just for them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, okay. So let's see. Where should I get started here? Okay, so I'm talking about improving performance, and I'd like to, as I often do, start with the definition of terms. So how would you describe what it means to improve the performance in your application?
Well, that's actually as multifaceted. I mean, it could be, I mean, one of the nice things about like Mavericks is the entire like energy monitor thing or whatever. Okay. That's just one facet of performance. It could be you could be doing, you know, doing something very slow but off the main thread, so you have perceptual performance. There's a lot of different ways to attack that.
Sure. So we'll start with the first definition. I think that a lot of people, this would be their common sense definition of what it means to improve performance, which is to make things go faster.
Yeah, that's there. Okay.
That's, you're right. When you say
it,
you're
putting something obvious.
Make it go faster.
Yeah.
Right? Now, we know as developers, as technologically oriented people, that is in fact impossible. The speed at which things can go in your application, based on the hardware of the device that the application is running on, is fixed. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, that's a simplification. You can overclock chips and that sort of thing. But overall, that's true. You can't actually make things go faster by writing your code in a certain way. You can't make the same work go faster.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why developers really love it when the chips get faster, right? Because then their stuff actually does get faster. It's not through anything they did. It's through the next round of hardware. And so they get that for free.
Yeah, that's known as the free lunch.
Free lunch, right. And of course, it's much, you don't get your free lunch quite so much anymore. You have to go hungry or go on a diet because for the most part, you know, desktop machines aren't getting much faster.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I think we can pretty much see the writing on the wall that, you know, while iOS devices, while mobile devices are getting faster, that will eventually slow down as well. So you can't actually make things faster in that case, but you can still improve performance. So what are some other candidates? Well, you can do more in less time. Now you might say, well, isn't that the same thing as the first one? Well, not quite, because what you mean is you're doing, you're actually getting more done, but doing things at the same speed and you're doing less time. How do you do that? Concurrency, right? And we talked about this in a couple of episodes already. We talked about it, or you talked about it, in episode 19 in the magical world of threads. And then also in episode 65, threads are interesting. And for me, it's interesting how many episodes, Wolf, you will do with the word threads in them.
I didn't even realize I did two episodes of threads. I'm not surprised at all, but there you go.
If you get to 10, I think you get some steak knives. So now for a certain class of applications, a certain class of tasks, this is a big focus. Applications like Xcode or Photoshop, where you want to do a large fixed amount of work quickly. And so compilation, code analysis, graphics processing, that sort of thing. And so, you know, you can't cheat in that sense. You need to do this amount of work. And so what you tend to do is you tend to throw a lot of resources at it. You tend to use large desktop machines, big iron. You talk about servers. We're talking about local machines, but still large desktop machines, towers, and you want to, you know, you throw a lot of cores at it. You throw a lot of parallelism at it. you know, just another thing I hadn't really thought of it when I wrote this down, you know, cracking passwords would be another one where you want this capability as well. We won't talk about that in any more detail. But I found that while this is a valid way to improve performance, it's actually pretty much an edge case now. It used to be the way a lot of people thought about performance, but now we have all these devices where that sort of a trade-off is not worthwhile. Now, if you look at the WWDC 2013 session core data performance, it's number 211, there's a graph in some of the opening slides which talks about the trade-offs you make for performance. And so I believe they have memory optimization on one end and speed optimization on the other. Wolf, do you remember this one?
Probably vaguely. The sessions tend to be a blur, so maybe. Yeah.
So there were arrows for where you should optimize for each of Apple's OSs, and neither arrow was in the exact center. iOS was closer to memory optimization, and OS X was closer to speed optimization. But I actually think that that's, and to that, you know, that was the way they divvied it up in their talk. But I think actually, for the most part, again, most of OS X is actually heading in the same direction as iOS, and you could see this in Mavericks as well, that they're very interested in making sure you don't use a lot of power, a lot of resources to get your work done. So I think in both cases, really most work is over on the use fewer resources, whereas only these few minority of tasks are over there with, you know, how to use all the resources you can until it's done. And let's see. So again, so over there, if you really want to go down that route, you can use that thing. You can say, you know, parallelize everything to make that go faster. But that's really not what I'm going to be focusing on, and not what I think most people focus on these days when they talk about performance. And I think you were also mentioning that, you know, performance. You said, you know, performance is just getting things off of the main thread. I actually think, you know, with GCD, Apple did give us a framework to make it easier to parallelize things. But I think what's actually pretty much happened here with GCD usage, at least that I've seen, is less that people use it for these massive amounts of bursty work, although people do use it for that, but more just as another easy way, or an easier way, to get stuff off the main thread. Than you used to be able to. Before, you had to make your own thread, you had to do your own stuff, and that was easy to get wrong. And you might say, well, of course, you know, it's a solved problem. Of course, it's so easy to get stuff off the main thread. Well, you know, of the apps that I've worked on over the last couple of years since I left Apple, all of them had some problems with lack of responsiveness on the main thread. And this isn't because, you know, people are, these are not dumb developers working on these applications, but it's just that, you know, if you don't keep your eye on the ball, it's very easy to get yourself into a point making a bunch of other decisions that wind up leading to this. So I would say that even if that is mostly what people use GCD for, it's still a good idea to make it as easy as possible and to keep working on continuing to make it easier, because it's still easy to fall into that trap. So let's see. So I would say, again, that is important to do, but that's also not what the main case that I'm going to be talking about tonight.
Another head fake, I see.
Another head fake. And there will be yet one more head fake, which is maybe one of the most interesting edge cases we have to talk about today, and one of the newest ones, which is do work when you're not looking. And this has come about most recently with the iOS 7's multitasking APIs. Because what you do there is, as the OS says, you know, last time around, you know, yesterday, you checked your Twitter or mail or whatever. With me, it's usually Twitter. At, you know, this time, and then at this time, and then 5 minutes later, and then 5 minutes after that. Anyway, and so we're gonna fetch those before you ask for it. And you know, it's a nice little sneaky way to do it, because when you check, when you open up your application, that's, let's say 10 a.m., all your, you know, the new tweets are there for you. You know, it feels instantaneous.
You know, you just gave away the fact that you're a programmer who works at home. you wake up and you check your tweets at 10 a.m.
That's just an example. I don't actually wake up at 10 a.m. Wake up at 9:45. But no, not that either. But anyway, but yeah, like when, you know, when you have to go to the server, you have to do all this work to get these things down. There's really no way to make that go faster than it's going after a certain point. So the way to improve that is to do it before you ask. Mm-hmm. And so iOS has a bunch of new APIs to work on that. They've got the fetch APIs where you can do some work in the background for this stuff. I believe it's called remote notification, like a mode, fetch and remote notification modes of background tasks, which let the OS handle letting you do those things. Mm-hmm. And then there's also, and one that I'm actually quite interested in, the NSURL session API, which I'm a little bummed. I haven't got a chance to use it yet. Mm. But I definitely did have an application that I could have used it for. And this application did exactly what Apple's stuff was talking about. Apple's sessions were talked about, where they said, you know, if you're trying to download a large file, for example, when the user puts their app in the background or when the user, closes down the device, you give, in practice, it was about 10 minutes to do that thing.
Yep,
and then you get killed off,
mm-hmm.
and that was that was really unfortunate, right? Because mm-hmm. you have users who say, you know, hey, I said to download this thing, why didn't you download it? And so iOS 7 says, well, we're still not going to let you do anything you want, but we are going to let you, we are going to control the process of letting you get this stuff from the server. And of course, the interesting thing here is with iOS 6. You could download it in a continuous stream for those 10 minutes. In iOS 7, you have more time to download it, but it's broken up into the times when the device is awake for other reasons. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. You know, we talked about cross-platform development last time around. That's a very different set of circumstances for you to be writing your logic in.
Mm-hmm.
But it, you know, it does make sense that they changed it that way. Now, it's also a trick that only the OS can pull off. You would, as I said, you wouldn't want the apps to have this capability. One, because they might abuse it, and two, because even if you said, okay, no, only the good people get to do it, it would give them undue burdens because you know they'd have to figure out when to do it. No, mm-hmm. you really want the OS to figure out when you should do it and handle all this stuff for you. Now, this is for iOS. I believe there are also some new sort of smart sleep behaviors in OS X in Mavericks. I believe it might do more when you've got the lid closed on your laptop than it used to, downloading updates, something like that. I haven't really looked into it.
Entire Dark Wake thing, right?
Dark Wake. It's right. I knew it had a weird name.
Some songs like a Dark Wing Duck thing or something.
Yeah, it's like another one of those, thrash metal bands like you were talking about. Dark Wake.
Your Batman impression? He's actually pretty good.
Now I'm self-conscious.
No,
I'm not going to do it.
Keep moving on.
But I don't believe there are APIs for apps to use, but maybe there are. I haven't looked into it, so I don't know. There certainly aren't the same level of APIs that there are in iOS, because in iOS, they really want to keep this out of apps' hands, where, of course, on OS X, you have a lot more freedom mm-hmm. to do things. But I believe that they're still trying to lock down sleep behaviors that apps can do during sleep. But again, I don't remember all the details. So in any case, this is interesting stuff. This is good stuff, but it's also still an edge case. It's not my normal modus operandi mm-hmm. when I think about optimizing performance, improving performance. So instead, all right, we're done with the head fakes. My definition of how I normally improve performance in my app is that I perform the task, but I do less to accomplish it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. All right, so the end of episode, we're 20 minutes in? Now, in some ways, I can afford to do this in the apps that I've worked on, because the apps I work on these days on iOS, and of course many of the apps on the Mac, they're all talking to a server. So the server, you can delegate a lot of the really heavy lifting to the server.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need a giant database locally in your app. It's often a server. Now, of course, servers are not magically immune to power consumption issues. If you figure, well, you know, the cloud is some abstract thing that's clean and friendly and everything like that, not really. Server farms are physical installations. They're power hogs. They're not great for the environment. So, you know, don't think you're getting off scot-free. Mm-hmm. But for our purposes tonight, most of the time, sending stuff off to the server is a good way to increase performance in your app. So let's see. So I guess the rest of this episode will be me talking about the techniques I've used recently to do that, to do less work.
To do less. And to be lazy, yeah.
To be lazy. That'll be four things.
So you get up at 10 a.m. and you admit to being lazy. Right. Okay.
You got me. And actually, it's interesting. I mean, this is going to be a lot like my debugger episode where, you know, I don't consider myself to be some really, I haven't said, oh, I really have to optimize this application, so I'm going to use all of these arcane, really specialized tricks to do it. No, actually, a lot of these are very simple things you might have already thought of yourself. So it's really more sort of, it's a lot like, you know, sort of the plumber's guide to blocks in the same way that I'm not a super scientist here. I'm just average Joe doing these things. So we'll see how much of this everybody finds interesting. The first one is actually just running Xcode's analyzer pretty often. And especially,
you mean like it's the static analyzer?
Static analyzer. Okay. Yeah. Especially to find memory leaks. Because if you're leaking a lot of memory, your app's going to, you know, have performance mm-hmm. issues eventually. Of course, on iOS, you get killed off. On OS X, you're going to, you get a page, going to mm-hmm. start paging in the Mac. And so what I found, you know, the analyzer is really good at finding, you know, sort of, it's good at finding the edge cases at the weird cases.
You're saying edge cases a lot during this episode. Is this like some sort of wrapper call out to yourself type thing?
Well, edge case, the title edge cases was in fact my idea, but no.
I give yourself credit for that. Yes, everyone. Edge cases was Andrew's
idea.
Well,
you said it was a call out. So yeah.
Okay.
Now, if you really want to reduce memory leaks, you should probably switch to Arc. And we did talk about Arc in many, many episodes ago. Not because it makes it impossible to create leaks, but because it just reduces the chance of doing that. Now you may think, well, use Arc because it's faster. And I think I've heard that myself. Various people have talked about, well, you know, Arc is faster than manual retain release. And I thought I had saved a tweet about how Arc, you know, this perception that Arc is faster is actually wrong, or at least it's wrong in some cases.
I would say it's a variable on your situation.
Yeah. And it would make sense that it might be slower, at least in some cases, because the compiler has to add in a whole bunch of extra retain release calls because it has to do things more defensively because it's trying to make code that works for all cases rather than just the cases that you know about when you're running your code. Now, on the other hand, there aren't actually Objective-C calls when mm-hmm. they do that. They've optimized it a little more than that. So, yeah, back and forth. Let's see. But again, I think it's a good step to use Arc because it's gonna take more of it out of your hands. And also, of course, the compiler, even if it doesn't do it quite as fast now, it has more chance to optimize it, you know, in subsequent releases. To make it faster. And in fact, you know, I do know from talking with Apple engineers, this is something they focus on, making it faster each time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, kind of the first thing. Well, do what you can to prevent memory leaks, because memory leaks are very easy to fall into. The second one is limiting server downloads. If you do have an app which uses, which interacts with the server, it's very easy to get yourself into a case. And I may sort of generalize this idea a little later when we talk about other stuff. But for example, you know, when you're downloading a list from the server, you know, and it's a list with 1,000 items in it, and you're scrolling through it on iOS, for example, well, mm-hmm. most people would know that, okay, don't download all 1,000 items, right? Just download what you need and proportionally download more when you scroll towards them. But another wrinkle on that's interesting, right, is you have a list, and then, you know, you normally with your iOS application have a filter, a search mm-hmm. field that you can bring down.
Mm-hmm.
And what you might think simplistic.
Naive.
Implementation might say, well, I want to filter that whole list, so I have to download it because now I want to filter it.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's normally how you do it. You get all your items and then you run a predicate on it, that sort of thing. Well, no. What you probably want to do is call up to the server and make sure that the server has APIs that will filter the full list for you, because the server is going to be optimized for doing a lot of that stuff. It's probably going to have a lot of it in memory already. The database will probably have algorithms in it that are better at searching through large amounts of data than what you can do locally. So you really want to, you know, it will probably be faster. Now, you might say, well, an extra server call might be slower, right? But if you haven't downloaded the full list, if you've only downloaded, say, 100 of the 1,000 items, it will certainly be faster. You go up to the server, have it do that work, and come back down to you with the result, than it would be for you to download 900 items and do it that way.
So are you thinking let's get a little concrete here. So usually like servers will then JSON or something like that. So are you thinking that you'd like stream that JSON and maybe the first item in the response would actually be how many items are in the results? So that way you know how many table cells to fill out. And then you could do something like, you know, that way you can start scrolling immediately and then kind of as the data comes in, fill in those cells?
Well, you do it whatever the way you did the original list, which is that, yeah, in some way it would tell you, you know, how long the list is going to be mm-hmm. and give you the first X number.
Okay.
So you can look through them that way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether it's JSON or whether it's through some other approach, you would still want to have that same approach. You know, one of the things you might want to try is to say, well, look at the items you already have from the original list and try to slot them into the resulting list, you know, filter.
Yeah.
And don't necessarily throw away what you already have unless, mm-hmm. unless you have to due to memory mm-hmm. pressures. So in that way, you know, the list that you have from the server, you know, they may only give you the first, 20 or so items of the filtered list. But it does depend on circumstances.
Right.
You might be able to slot in things later, but you might not. Like, because for them to give you a list, let's say there are IDs involved,
mm-hmm.
and for the server to give you, well, okay, there's only, you know, 200 items in that mm-hmm. list, but you don't necessarily want them to send you all those IDs of those 200 items mm-hmm. initially. So, you know, you may have to go back and forth a little bit on that to make all that work. But it is doable. I've done some of that anyway. I haven't necessarily done all of it.
Now, are you actually like controlling the code on server then too?
No, of course you do have to. There you do have to make sure that you work it out with the server folks to make sure that they have those APIs handy. But of course, one of the nice things about that is that then, and we talked about this with them. Which one did I talk about this on? It might have been cross-platform development. Might have been somewhere else, where the less stuff you do on the client, the more all of your other clients will have the same behavior. Because if you say, well, here I have this convoluted, complex way of making things go a little faster by downloading some things locally and doing a lot of extra processing locally, then you're saying, well, every other client, if they want that behavior, has to implement that themselves. And of mm-hmm. course, they'll probably implement it a little differently, and then they won't get updated the same way. You know, again, it's just better to throw it all on the server for both cross-platform reasons and for optimization for performance reasons. In my experience. Okay. And then, so the third one is, the third one is just to use instruments. And what's interesting here for me is that I don't actually have that much to say about this. Right. Next point. No, I do have a few things to say. I do personally find instruments to be a fairly blunt instrument, quote unquote. I only reach for it myself when there is a visible problem when, for example, your scrolling is stuttering, when, you know, you've got unresponsiveness in your UI. And, you know, again, I use it very simply. I use the time profiler, you know, check off some things. And I just see, you know, what of my code is getting called a lot that, mm-hmm. that I don't expect to be getting called. And you know, it's a little it's a little embarrassing that in an episode about performance review, performance optimization, I don't have more to say about it than that. But I also think that it's good to not get too obsessed with running instruments all the time. You should probably only go down on, you know, you don't want to go down rat holes about, you know, ooh, there's this method that's showing up, you know, 5% of the time, and I want it to go down to 2%. No, only use it when you need to. Mm-hmm. But I could, you know. And again, also, I think with putting so much of it on the server, you do have less of a need to optimize a lot of tricky algorithms on the client if a lot of the work is being done there. But yeah, that's been my experience. My experience is, you know, use instruments occasionally when you need to. And that's worked for me, and that's made my applications pretty nice. Okay. Also, instruments on Mavericks, at least, mm-hmm. when I've tried it recently, it beachballs a lot mm-hmm. on my laptop.
Interesting.
And I have a ton of memory, mm-hmm. and the apps I'm running are small iOS applications, but it's still, mm-hmm. it just beachballs. Mm. So, you know, again, that would be another reason for me to, you know, just not have it running all the time, not run it every time I run the app, for example. Oh, I just use it when there are problems. Now, there's a less... You don't actually have to run instruments to get some of instruments' benefits because they do have those new gauges in Xcode 5. But they're very coarse-grained. I mean, they'll show you how much memory is being used overall, how much CPU is being used overall. So those are good for sort of warning signs. If you're doing something which you don't think should be taking a lot of CPU or a lot of memory, and suddenly it's spiking, then you go ahead and open up instruments and try to find out what's going on. So, and then the fourth one is actually kind of a grab bag, which is if I want to find good ways to improve performance that I don't already know about, there's a lot of good stuff in Apple's WWDC sessions. And so I wanted to go through some of the sessions that I've listened to or I've seen the slides for that I think would be quite handy. And I'll be putting links to these in the show notes. As we've said before, these are WWDC 2013 sessions, which means they have sort of current links as opposed to links which are specific to the year. So these will probably break. You know mm-hmm. what? I've thought about it. You know, I'll probably go back and fix them. You know, when
I thought the philosophy is that our show is immutable after we go.
I know, but we've added so many of these that I think I might make an exception because it'd just be so annoying to have, like, you know, 20 to 30 of our links just break next year. So I might make an exception for that, which just goes to show maybe I'm a hypocrite. Anyway, so the session 204, what's new in multitasking, talks about those iOS 7 APIs. That was very interesting to look at those. And I think I just mentioned above the core data performance session 211. And it's interesting, you know, I talked about, well, you know, put stuff on the server, make the server do more stuff. It's actually interesting that the core data performance session talks a lot about that, except it's the local database rather than the server database that they're talking about, you know. Mm-hmm. They say things like, you know, don't load too much. Set a fetch request batch size, for example, that can reduce the amount of work that you're doing, the things you're bringing into memory from the database. You know, don't download a giant image from the server if mm-hmm. all you need is a thumbnail.
Right.
They talk about that. And then they talk about using SQLite to group things for you. And I didn't look into exactly what that means, but certainly if they mean things like sorting or filtering, again, you know, as I said, the server database can do that stuff faster than you can. Well, SQLite can do that faster than your code can as well. Mm-hmm. If you say, well, you know, give me this whole bunch of objects and then I'll sort them locally. Mm-hmm. You know, don't do that unless you absolutely have to. Now, sometimes you do. Sometimes you're already asking for it in a certain order, and then you need to do a second operation on it. You know, if you need to, you need to. But don't do that unless you have to. And then they also have a bit about optimizing predicates, which is very interesting. Some ways of setting up your predicates will result in a lot more work than other ways, so you should make sure you look at that.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also talked about session 224, designing code for performance, and that was actually where we first talked about. That was the one where I couldn't give you a link because Apple's ADC website was down.
Oh right,
that yeah.
Yeah, that entire fiasco, right?
Entire fiasco. Okay, but it's still, you know, it's good. It's a good basic run through of performance issues. So I'll put another link to that in there. Optimizing your code using LLVM was good, and the one thing that I just learned today, looking at that one, was link time optimization. That flag. Have you heard about this?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, I think I heard that they were planning on doing this, but I never. I must have missed the announcement that they'd actually gone ahead and done it. And so if you haven't heard of this, which maybe everybody has, this idea that normal optimization happens within each compilation unit. They do it for each compilation unit as it goes by. And I think that was kind of the end of what you could do with GCC, for example. GCC, am I saying that right? Yes. But what LLVM does is that they then say, well, since we're a library, we have more access points than other people do than GCC did. We can then take everything after you've put together all of the compilation unit code and squeeze more stuff out of it after that. So that's pretty cool. And I can't think of a reason why you would not turn that on for your applications. Make the compilation a little slower, but it would they had little graphs in the session about how much it improves things. It's easy money. And then let's see, we'll talk about three more. Building efficient OS 10 apps was also a good one, 704. And one thing that I learned from that was string dupes. Wolf, have you heard of this?
String dupes?
Yeah, or string dupes. It's probably dupe. So string dups, yeah. It's a command line tool. Probably
I haven't heard about this, no.
It's probably only for OS 10 because it seems like something you have to run on your app while it's running from the command line, so it's a little harder to run on iOS apps. But it'll find all of the multiple occurrences of strings which are actually the same.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. C strings, Objective-C strings, and then actually it seems to be fairly badly named because it also does dates and other things. But yeah, you can have a look at that.
Does it do date formatters?
I don't believe it uses it does date format. Okay. NS cache, which I have used, NS purgeable data, which I have not used. They mentioned those two. Mm-hmm. Interesting with NS cache. Now maybe it's just because I didn't read the instructions, but I had to play around with it to find out when things are actually purged when you use an NS cache. And in iOS, it seems like if you put the app in the background and bring it up to the foreground again, then all your caches are purged, and it makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense. I think I might have wanted a little more fine-grained control over it rather than kind of finding out, you know, the how it worked doing it like that. But I can live with that. And, there are a couple other things there, and I think I'm going to pass them over. The last one I want to talk about was the Accelerate framework.
Yeah.
Which is also a bit of a, Wolf?
Edge case?
Yes.
Oh, God.
Because it's really only used for very specific things. And, you know, I talk about image processing, and I think the one concrete example they mentioned in the talk was like creating a JPEG. But also, I think, you know, probably doing, like, making an image, I don't know, smaller or something like that. But in any case, uses the graphics processor, and what they said, actually one of their little bullet points was optimized for all generations of hardware. Now, that's the Apple line. I suspect it's not magic, right? If you say, oh, they optimized the hell out of it for every processor, for everything. Well, you know, if they had a little, you know, a bad little or a weak processor in certain models of, you know, iPhone or, you know, MacBook Air or whatever, you know, it's probably not going to perform magic on those things. So you shouldn't expect that. But, you know, it'll do something. It can't hurt.
And yeah, also, I also heard, maybe you're going to talk about this, but I understand that VImage actually got a bunch of new support for direct support, like for CG image import and pixel buffers that apparently make it a lot more reasonable to use.
For you to use, yeah. I looked through that in the slides. Again, I have not actually used the Accelerate framework myself.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of that was kind of Greek to me until I found ways of using it. But yes, yeah, so core image integration with this, good stuff if you're using it. Another aspect of this is, when you talk about cross-platform development, as I have, you often have to use sort of the lowest common denominator for all the platforms, or you have to do special things for some platforms and not for other platforms. So, for example, what's the thing that iOS is always lacking? Well, you always need to add in your own XML parsing, right, on iOS, because mm-hmm. they don't have the same APIs that they have on the Mac side. Well, the nice thing about the Accelerate framework is that it is, as far as I know, available in full, mostly in full, for iOS and Mac. And, they optimize it for each one because that's something that they wanted to make sure they had. And Apple's not the only one who does this sort of stuff. It brings to mind, like, DirectX for mm-hmm. Windows and Xbox, mm-hmm. Microsoft providing the same API in both places. Same thing, same hope that, you get some use out of that. Again, it's things which are using the graphics processor so that you can do things more efficiently. So again, you can get more things done for less actual work.
Mm-hmm.
And I was originally actually going to say that it's like free money, right, to get that because it's doing more work for you for no extra effort on your part.
Mm-hmm.
But really, it is extra effort on your part, right? You do need to change your code. You do need to change. You need to write specialized code to call these APIs, to set up your data to use these APIs. And then that means that, you're going to need to maintain this. If you want to refactor the code, you're going to have to take that into account. So it's really kind of like, money that you pay for.
Otherwise known as a loan.
But it can still, if you're focused, you really want to make your app faster and you're willing to pay those maintenance costs, mm-hmm. then I think it can be worthwhile. But again, haven't used it myself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it for me.
Okay. And you did a good job. I was trying to, build up my notes here, little things, little edge cases you hadn't got into, but you did, right. did a good job of exploring the nooks and crannies, as it were. So I'm done too.
Okay. All right. So I'm trying to think of some sort of joke about being done faster, but Alrighty. And I don't have... Okay, so to see the show notes for this episode, go to edgecasesshow.com, all one word, /68, and we'll see you next time.